From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Russell. Well, it is upon us. Judgment Day, Strike Day. If you're listening to this, you know the answer to whether or not the Writers Guild is striking. We still don't, because as we're recording this right now, last-minute negotiations are going on, and we don't know yet whether or not there will be work for the writers tomorrow and the repercussions of that throughout this business. So really exciting times to be in this business, and thank you so much for joining us and talking about it. We have an episode today that doesn't necessarily relate to the Writers Guild, but it is we're talking to Tim Bierbaum, who's director, writer, animator, graphics guy, all-around filmmaker, and a guy who's done a lot of short form and digital content. And it does seem like the digital content is at some of the crux of this strike that is about to happen. Ben Hosley's here. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Nate.
I mean, how you feeling? I'd say that I don't see a way that this turns, that there isn't some sort of strike. Even if they resolve it quickly, I feel like we're going to go into tomorrow and not have a contract in place.
I agree. I'm anticipating the same. I don't see them resolving this.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, it could be a really extended strike.
Yes, it really could. And I was just reading today that I didn't realize this, that SAG-AFTRA is about to go into negotiations in a couple of months as well. So it's possible that what we have is negotiation piled on top of negotiation. And already it seems to be that the deal that the studios gave to the Directors Guild is some of what is holding up. Like, they're pointing to that deal, the writers are, and saying, you gave them 3%. You're only offering us 2%. So at minimum, we need to get what they got. But as soon as we get into a place where they're negotiating with the writers and SAG, I feel like that could get pretty messy. Right?
Yeah, the convergence of all of this negotiation.
Yeah.
It's good timing for unions.
Yep.
And I guess not good time for studios.
Yeah, I mean, to be seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if there's one thing that studios have demonstrated is that they're also somewhat bulletproof, you know? they seem to keep going. They find a way to get theirs, right?
For sure.
And interesting to see how the sort of this digital landscape is affected by all this as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, is it going to be that now all of these folks sitting around twiddling their thumbs, are they going to start making funnier dive videos popping up in those?
Or is it that what winds up happening is that we have a stronger sort of like union policing of the content that's being put out, you know what I mean, that has money behind it in the digital space?
Right.
Is this the moment where we start to have it sort of like, you know, I mean, policed is a hard way of saying it, but just sort of like, does it become the purview of the guilds a little more securely than it has been?
Because they seem to turn a blind eye somewhat to like digital non-union stuff.
Like anything, I think that the digital space, it's hard to keep track of everything that's going on.
Right.
You know, it's hard to tie it all down. And so the question is this a moment where some of that starts to change, especially as it relates to stuff that these studios are, you know, are part of inside of that kind of distribution model,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But who knows? Interesting times. And if you've got any thoughts on it, give us a tweet. We're at UCB Digital, Facebook, UCB Digital Podcast. Always happy to talk to you. And we'll see how this goes as we enter into the month of May and a potential prolonged labor strike, labor uprising. Who knows? We'll see what happens. Back to today's episode and our good buddy Tim Bierbaum, who is nice enough to take the time and sit down and talk to us. And like we were saying, Tim is a master of all things short form. This guy's got a resume in short form that is pretty unmatched. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos with millions and millions of clicks and views and quality stuff as well. Comedy fans around New York will know Tim from his work with Serious Lunch, who was a really prolific sketch and video group around New York and UCB and the whole scene here in New York City the better part of 10 years ago. But still active in that I think they are still all buds and do stuff together once in a while, but maybe not under that moniker. And then as well, you might know Tim from his work at Above Average, where he's been a staff director for the last few years. In fact, we caught Tim as he was starting to transition out of that job and back into the freelance directing world, where I'm sure a lot of opportunities await him. I've already seen some of his work. He's been doing freelance. He just directed, Ben, I don't know if you saw this, the Broad City, Hack into Broad City series. He's directing all those pieces, more short form for him. Have you seen those? They're great.
No, I haven't had a chance. I'm going to definitely check them out. And I think we'll repost on our social media feeds as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's another example of something that is inside of a network environment, but also sort of like on a digital platform, because it's a short form sort of content that they put out between seasons that like keeps the, you know, keeps the fans' appetite going, and a fun sort of like creative way to do some different stuff as well. So that's the kind of thing that feels like it's in the crosshairs of this type of negotiation, right?
Yeah.
And so Tim on a directing side, hundreds and hundreds of videos for Serious Lunch and Above Average and personally and all these different ways, and wanted to sit down and talk to him about his development inside of that space. What does the boot camp of doing so many hundreds of videos over the course of 10 years teach you about the process? How does it evolve your process? What does it have your appetite ready for going forward? All sorts of interesting questions for a guy who's got a really strong resume and a lot of experience in this world. And clearly has a passion for the work as well. We also took the time while we were having this conversation to sip a Bronx beer. If you haven't checked out the Bronx Brewery's selection of craft beers, go to thebronxbrewery.com. All the selections are there, and they are the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. On this show, we sipped the Slow Your Roll IPA, which is one of my favorites, and I think it is your favorite, right, Ben?
Yeah, for sure. I love IPAs. This one in particular has got some notes of guava.
Yeah, I just saw that. I have not tasted the guava, although I've got to be truthful, I have not been looking for it. And so we took the chance to sip that while we had a conversation. And we started off by talking about this crazy project that he and I worked together on a few years ago with Dan Klein, which was an hour-long comedy special for a sort of Dan Klein stand-up comedian character that he was playing, basically the most arrogant comedian in the history of the world, which Dan plays brilliantly. And so we talked about that collaboration, haven't seen him since then. So that's where we started, our conversation with Tim Bierbaum. So, you know, I think the last time, Tim, that we were in the same room was at my apartment when we were finishing the Dan Klein project together.
I think so, yeah.
That was the last time. Where does that – you've done a lot of big, ambitious, like, weird, sort of semi-crazy projects in your life. Where's that Dan Klein one rate for you in terms of the Mount Everest of crazy projects that had, you know, no budget and,
yeah.
And we're just sort of like,
yeah, no
silly
budget
comedy project.
I love that video. I think it's
me
still
too
on the front page of my site.
Oh my God.
That was so fun to work on. But yeah, no budget is how I describe it.
Most things, eh?
Yeah. I was like pretty much a one-man band for most of the shoot. I was like, I had a tripod I had rigged up with like a 5-pound weight hanging off of it so I could use it as a steady cam and also as a tripod.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the boom mic taped to the tripod. So I was wearing headphones and just shooting on the fly.
Yeah.
Like a lot of that stuff was just me and Dan.
I remember, and I don't think I ever said this to you, but in the edit, I remember being really impressed by the cinematography in now we're just really inside baseball here. That we're going straight for it. There's a documentary about 45 minutes in that's like Dan in his apartment.
Oh yeah.
And I remember being really impressed like by your ability to like get doc style shots that cut together really easily and really well.
Oh man. Thank
but
you.
That also were like really beautiful for what I knew had no one there.
Yeah.
right,
thank
that was
you.
Just
yeah.
The two of you
yeah.
in that room. Yeah.
Well, I had produced a couple of shoots that were like along those lines.
Yeah.
I used to produce TV commercials, and I produced a video for UBS Bank that had an mm-hmm. artist named Stephen Wiltshire drawing the New York City skyline. He's this guy with like this incredible photographic memory, and he went up in a helicopter and looked at the city, and then he came back to a studio and he drew the whole thing from memory, kind of like from downtown working his way up.
Yeah.
And that was a really small shoot. It had a really small budget for an advertisement. And seeing how that came together and the kind of shots that they selected and just the director's approach,
yeah,
I was standing by kind of like excited to try something like that myself.
That's
so
cool.
I had a lot of ideas ready to go for that segment.
That's cool. You've done, and you also, at Above Average, you made a few doc-style things too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You did
we
all those
have,
docs,
Doc
is that what
Docs
it's called?
Series. Yeah.
Those are all really beautiful too.
Thanks, man. It's great when there's something to lean into that's not just a straightforward sketch where there's like a genre and you can kind of bring something to it visually and play with different things that kind of like build a world more than just telling a joke.
Do you have any experience in actual documentary filmmaking too? Or is it mostly documentary parody?
Just slightly. I mean, I've picked up a couple freelance jobs. Yeah. I've done a couple like interview films, but I haven't created any docs myself, no.
But a lot of documentary sort of like parody elements.
Yeah, making fun of docs a lot.
And very good at it. Awesome, man. Well, I think, you know, I was excited to talk to you because at this point, your sort of directing resume in like digital comedy goes back to like the inception of it, right? You were sort of making digital shorts in like 2007.
Right, yeah. That's when we put our site online, but we were shooting those probably since 2005 or 6. So this is with my sketch group.
Serious Lunch.
Serious Lunch, yeah. We all met in college in film class. When we graduated, a few of kind of my group of friends moved to the same part of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We were living like far Greenpoint. And we like doing like sketch videos in our free time. So we're shooting them in the afternoon and decided like, oh, let's make a website. Let's put these up. And that was right around the time that like Lazy Sunday came out and YouTube started to blow up.
It blew up YouTube.
Mm.
It literally like exploded YouTube.
Yeah. That was the first time I heard of YouTube.
Yeah.
I can't remember watching a video on there before. It's like the first time I thought it was amazing you could actually watch a video online.
I know.
I mean, before that, it was like these tiny little quick times that are like 240p or something. But initially we were shooting these sketches thinking like, oh, let's do a cable access show. I went to Brooklyn Cable Access like meeting and kind of filled out the paperwork, and we were ready to do like a half hour of broadcast, like sketch and I guess live stuff in the studio. And then YouTube came out and we saw kind of like people starting to get attention there. So decided like, oh, let's just put these on there instead.
And at that point in that team, what was the balance on that team in terms of between like creative and like performance and then also like the filmmaking side of it? Because you guys were largely a sketch video group, right?
Yeah, we did a stage show at like the Pit a couple times a month and whatever other stages. We were at UCB one, like, I don't know, a few times a year, but mostly video. Just because that's sort of where a lot of our interests were. Like, so the group was John Mielheiser, Bill Keenly, Anthony Mialy, Bob Officer. John and Bill wanted to be performers.
Yep.
The rest of us were more interested in like the technical stuff or like behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
So it was like a good balance of like a good group of people to get a video made. We didn't have roles though. We didn't like assign each other like you're producing this one, you're directing. We all just kind of chipped in and put the video together sort of on the fly. Like I don't think we even storyboarded a lot of the videos.
That's interesting because don't you have a visual, you also have like a art and visual like design background too, right?
Right.
You didn't storyboard back in those days.
I don't remember storyboarding a lot of them. Like sometimes when we'd bring in an actor that was like, you know, a little more important or had a little less time to spend with us, we'd kind of take it a little more seriously. But it was part of the approach was just like we started out doing videos with a camcorder and we would basically edit them in camera. Like we wouldn't shoot one side of a scene and then flip and shoot the other. We would just
go back and forth
and get the moments.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was like kind of editing it in your head and making it up in the moment.
Was that something that you did because that's how you thought to do? Like, what was the reason that you did it that way?
Was it that was kind of how we made videos at the time because we didn't have software.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a camcorder, and then you'd take the tape out and put it into like a caddy that you could put into a VCR and watch it that way. So there was no like post process, and like certain videos, we would just be playing like a tape recorder with music on it next to the camera to have like a soundtrack under it.
Wow!
And that was sort of how we were doing videos in college. And like even though we were taking film classes, we were learning like the correct way to approach something.
Sure,
it was fun just to like do a video where you didn't really have to be too concerned with that stuff.
Adhere to
just
that.
Have fun and be creative.
That's pretty gritty, man.
Yeah,
that's pretty gritty.
Yeah, I like it gritty.
Feels like it's sort of like everybody on board, let's do some stuff. It almost feels like an extension of film school. When you guys made over 100 videos, right?
Yeah.
That feels like its own form of film school.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you're essentially doing that no one's asking you for.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At what point does it start to, like, pick up? Because at a certain point, you guys were, I remember when I first started around here, I knew who you guys were and I knew your videos.
Mm.
You know what I mean? At what point did it start to feel like it picked up at all? Or did it ever feel that way?
I don't know. Like, it definitely did. There was a certain point where we transitioned, like, to HD video. Like, okay. Our first ones were... We tried shooting sketch on film at the very beginning, and we got the film developed, and it looked like shit. We're like, all right, why did we do that?
Yeah.
So we're shooting them on, like, a nice, but, like, SD camcorder, or, like, prosumer camera.
Yeah.
We shot a video called Girls Night Out, and it had, like some actresses that were known, and we borrowed some HD cameras for that one, and, like, it had a ton of locations, and we storyboarded that. And that one felt like more of like a, you know, a put together film.
Yeah.
It felt a little less gritty, I guess. And that was sort of when we were like, oh, we can make something that looks really nice for almost nothing. Like,
yeah.
We should kind of start leaning into this a little more.
Because it, I guess the reason why I'm at, like, the reason why I get to it is because in the past, right, a developing artist and developing director had the luxury of doing a bunch of work that probably wasn't visible 10 years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Or you'd have to really search for it or go out of your way.
Yeah.
In some ways, your development as a director, which now when I see your work now, I'm like, it's really slick. It's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And even in an environment like we're talking about with Dan, where nobody else is there, it looks high production value, even when it is still in a gritty environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the development of that skill set happens on camera.
Yeah.
Right? When you can go back and look at that stuff still.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you don't.
I don't.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I have, and it's not...
not the most fun experience?
Yeah, it doesn't quite represent what I do now, but yeah, I don't know. I shot a few films in film school, and those cost a lot of money, and it was still at a time when you weren't quite... Didn't quite know what you were doing and weren't sure what it was going to turn out looking like. And that felt like a sort of a waste of money and time.
Yeah.
And I'd rather just shoot something that has less overhead. You can experiment a little more.
Yeah.
And just by working, I think you start to develop skills that you could see, I guess, develop through the timeline.
With the group with Serious Lunch, how do you feel like that by the time you sort of like, when did you guys stop making videos? Was it about the time that John got on SNL?
Yeah.
Is that about when the group stopped being regularly outputting? And you got a job around then too.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we all sort of got jobs working professionally. And I think even if you're not working on your own stuff, if you're doing something creative and contributing in a creative capacity, it can kind of allow you to feel like you're doing something fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
So before, where we all had these kind of like 9-to-5 jobs that weren't anywhere close to like what our ambitions were, it was easy to come home after work and spend another 6 hours working on a video.
Sure.
But if you're working on a video all day and you come home, you kind of feel like you've done that.
Yeah.
So it's a little less compelling. We also all lived in a house together in Greenpoint for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And kind of being in this creative environment where you'd come home from work and there's like one guy like painting a picture on the couch and there's another guy with an edit system on the kitchen table like cutting a video, like, just kind of makes you want to work and want to produce things.
Wants to push yourself in that way.
Yeah.
And by the time you get out of that house, I imagine people are like moving in with, you know, relationships are
definitely that
moving,
and like
progressing and
like
life is changing and
doing professional
to LA
stuff and John moved to Los Angeles and it just felt like like it kind of became more and more a back burner thing.
Yeah.
We still did a few videos with above average.
Yeah.
But it was definitely like less a focus of everybody's kind of like week to week.
And in the meantime, the sort of like work that you were doing at an ad agency during the day, that also is still sort of like you're still defining that as a day job. That was never a passion.
No.
Track or something that you threw a lot of creative energy towards. Was it ever a creative position or was it always producing?
I mean, I think it is a creative position. I think you sort of have one foot in the creative world and one in the business side of things.
Yeah.
I think it's a great job. It just wasn't for me. I've always felt like I had someone else's career. I had happened into this opportunity, and it was a great way to make money, and I was doing pretty well. I'd get to travel to Los Angeles a couple times a year. I'd get to go to other parts of the world, and you know, I had a lot of spending money. I had a lot to put towards like an apartment, but it was never what I wanted to be doing. And even though it was better than waiting tables or something, it still wasn't exactly like creatively satisfying.
Yeah. And during that, how long were you at that job or in that world?
I produced ads for maybe 5 years.
Okay.
6 years.
And when was about the time you got out of that?
I think around 2013.
2013.
I think right around when you and I met.
And so, and that sort of seems to transition then, that sort of dovetails into your relationship at Above Average.
Yeah, I suppose. I was freelancing for a little while.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I guess it doesn't really dovetail, but the opportunity at Above Average came up, and I stopped taking freelance ad work and started working full-time in their creative department.
Can I ask, what is the... So when you're in the place where you're working in that ad world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the day job, and you have this group and this passion at night that you're sort of driving yourself with creatively, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the impetus at the point where you sort of said, "Let me stop doing the day job stuff and start doing the passion stuff all the time for mm-hmm. the job?"
Well, I guess I was at a point professionally, like as a director, that I was starting to get opportunities that would actually pay.
Yeah.
Where a lot of times the stuff I was working on was like, hey, we need a director. Do you like this script?
Yeah.
Do you want to do it for nothing?
Uh-huh.
But that's like a great way to learn.
Yeah.
At the same time, like there aren't a lot of opportunities like Above Average. They brought me in, I think partially because of my ad experience, because there's definitely a part of that business that is advertising related.
Sure.
And brought me in to be a full-time staff director. So it was a way to make a living, and it was, you know, a way to start doing something at a much larger capacity than I had.
Sure.
I think at that point, I think on my website, I didn't even list myself as director. I think it was just producer because, I don't know, I felt like, I guess it was a little like self-deprecating or like,
yeah,
humble, but I felt like, oh, I'm not really doing like what a professional director does. I'm still doing like sort of, you know, shoots where there's like a 3-person crew and I'm doing all the department roles. And
mm-hmm.
It took a few months of kind of doing real shoots with real crews and working with a DP and everything before I took all the advertising stuff completely off my site and changed it over to director, illustrator.
Yeah. And that was after you had gone to Above Average that you sort of made that transition.
Yeah.
So Above Average was part of that growth and transition.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was a great place to be. Just getting the reps in, getting to do a video almost every week.
Yeah.
Getting to experiment a lot and try all different types of series and videos is a really unique opportunity.
Yeah, that's cool. How many, if you had to sort of... you said it's about one a week. You were there for like, we're catching you right now at the end of that sort of like phase of life. You're on to sort of like a new chapter now.
Sure. Yeah.
So then if you were there from like 2014 to now, that's a lot of videos.
Yeah. It's a lot of videos. I mean, I think we were working harder than most people that were doing similar things in these other like websites were, but I don't know. How many exactly? I'd say it's like 60 to 70 a year. Because we'd try to shoot one a week, but then we'd have some weeks where we'd shoot more.
Yeah.
And all different kinds. Like some would be just a couple people sitting on a couch talking or like a studio shoot. Other ones would be like a fake movie trailer where there's, you know, tons of locations and shots and everything.
So, wow. I mean, like, honestly, when you take a step back and look at that from the perspective of like, a body of work, that's a shit ton of short form, man.
Yeah, for sure.
That is a ton. Because if you're talking about 100 videos with Serious Lunch, just that group,
mm-hmm.
and then you're talking about 70 videos a year for Above Average for 3 years, plus all the other stuff that you're doing on the outside of that, which is like a ton of like really great like short form series. You directed a bunch of The Actress. You did some stuff with Broad City. You were doing a whole bunch of other stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of short form content, man.
Yeah. I agree. I don't know. Like I like to work, and I just definitely like something that's important to me, and it's easy for me to prioritize that in my life.
Yeah.
And to make that my focus and where I want to spend my time.
As a director now, right? What is your are you still doing stuff? So you're I know you're in a new phase, but I guess while you've been at Above Average, have you also been like taking on stuff outside of that job? Passion-wise, or is it pretty much pouring?
Shooting a couple things for friends, shooting a couple things like not comedy stuff, but just like client-based work.
Cool.
And then they're very cool at Above Average about giving you kind of unpaid time off to go do other projects. So
okay.
I shot a little bit with Comedy Central, a little bit with MTV, and a couple other places.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that's even more.
Yeah.
That's even more work.
Yeah.
God, man, that's crazy. That is so much shit. Let me maybe ask you about process and how maybe that's evolved, right?
Uh-huh.
Having done this quantity of stuff, like, how has your process as a director maybe, like, changed over the years?
Oh, man.
Or even in the last few, even in the time at Above Average. Because some of that before is really gritty. You're saying that, like, working at Above Average is where crews and budgets and stuff start to become more a regular part of your of your process.
Yeah. I mean, before then, I had never worked with a DP. I had never had anybody doing something on my video that they were specialized in.
Uh-huh.
So getting to collaborate with different people that were really good at this one aspect of a film, DP, art director, even like hair and makeup, and getting to like work with them to create a character or wardrobe has been, a really interesting part of development. But like, I don't know, just trying to think, like, in a broad way, I think I've become more able to rely on myself to know that I can put a video together, and that allows me to be a little more relaxed in how the day is managed, how I speak to actors, how specific I am with the way things are photographed or come together. I think starting out, I used to be a lot more rigid, and I used to have in my head this way that I want a line to work or a way I want a scene to play out.
Sure. And
I've started to realize that what I'm imagining might not be the best version of something, that when other creative people can put their voice into it and kind of bring it to life, that there's maybe a better version, and that I've learned to recognize that and to let myself follow that as it develops on set.
Hmm. That's interesting, because that also sounds a little bit like you are developing the ability to trust in that environment, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I think that desire for control, especially when you're first starting out, is a desire to say, I don't trust someone else's creative input. You're essentially saying like that you're doing your part of the job, someone else is doing their part of the job. You're going to find a way to like help make the best version of it. Like there's a trust factor there.
Yeah. And I definitely have preferences. Yeah. And I definitely like know, like for example, in a lighting setup, what's working for my eye and what, you know, might not be exactly what a photographer is suggesting, and we can work to make it the best it is. But I do like trusting somebody else's instincts and inspiration to kind of create something that's larger than what one person can kind of present.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. It also seems like there's a background that you have in doing work that requires you to wear a lot of hats, that also makes you familiar with the complexity of each of those individual jobs.
Yeah.
Right? If you've been shooting your own stuff, I think that only can help, like, especially if that's the way you start, that can only be helpful as a director in terms of, like, then knowing how to, you know, knowing the complexity of the job of a DP once you're in a position where you have a partner like that to also be contributing to a project.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of my strengths, and I feel, lucky to have had the time to develop those skills. But, like, when we were shooting our own stuff years ago, I didn't know anybody that was a professional DP. I didn't know anyone that was a professional editor. So we just learned to do all these things ourselves. And, you know, I learned how to edit. I learned how to create create visual effects. I was a photographer. I definitely held the boom plenty of times, mixed videos. So I think knowing those skills helps communicate with somebody that does that, and also kind of lets you know like what the limits are of something, like when something can be pushed to be better and when something is kind of, oh, that is what it is. Like, this is kind of within our constraints. This is the best version of what we're going to be doing.
Did you learn all those things for a reason, or was it just sort of like a matter of circumstance?
I mean, I think it's like you imagine the video you want to make, and then you work backwards to figure out how to make it.
Yeah.
Like, I think green screen stuff's like, you know, it's obviously pretty common now, but like 7 or 8 years ago, there weren't a lot of sketch groups doing like green screen shoots.
Yeah.
And that was something where it's like we had an idea for video and didn't have a location, so just made it up.
Yeah.
And learned how to key stuff and learned how to like comp together actors and backgrounds. And once you do that once, you could kind of build off that starting point and get more nuanced with it.
And is that true of all the sort of different crew positions and contributions? It was sort of like out of necessity?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to make a video, you just figure out how to do it. Yeah.
I remember there was a phase of time where people had this attitude about, speaking about green screen, where the attitude towards green screen was, that's the way to make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is true at all.
No.
Once you get into it, especially like coming from like the editor side of it, where I was for a long time, I was always like, this doesn't make it easier. This made it easier for production. But like, it can be just as complicated to put together a, you know, like a very nuanced, like,
cut in
the green screen environment without just making it one shot head on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's, I think for a little while it was novel. And then you saw like Tim and Eric came out and really kind of blew it out, like just using it in such extreme, absurd ways. And then for a little while, a lot of kind of derivative stuff came out after that, kind of using like this ugly aesthetic that they had developed. And at that point, it became less novel and more like, oh, like this was just a lazy way of doing something.
I feel like we need to, in like comedy videos, retire the trope of the local green screen commercial.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, unless there's a really good reason that the joke has to be in that environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because at this point, it's like it's been diced off in so many ways that if it's just the delivery format of a sketch idea, it's pretty exhausted.
I mean, it's not even something that exists in earnest anymore.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
Local TV knows what that is and doesn't look like that. I think, you know, there is like a sort of thing where like, I think everybody's used to watching comedy videos now because of YouTube. Everybody's familiar with the beats, and even like somebody that's not a sophisticated viewer knows, kind of has a muscle memory for like how things heighten and when things happen and the timing of a comedy video. I think there's a point where videos have become self-aware. Like a comedy video is about a comedy video now. And there's probably a way to do a local cable access that's an interesting take, but it does feel pretty tired,
Yeah, it just feels like it's almost like it's not enough. Like the novelty of just that format was enough for a while, and now it's worn off.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's going to be true of other stuff very soon too. Like there's a lot of stuff right now that's like playing off of that two camera YouTube look, right?
Yeah.
We're in another 5 years, we're going to be like, stop doing that.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like people haven't done that for 5 years.
Yeah.
They stopped doing that a while ago. I guess, how was the comedic approach and your contribution to it on a creative side in the above average environment?
Mm-hmm.
Cause you've been there for now a few years and now you're sort of coming out of it. But like, was there a lot of overlap in your contribution as a director with the sort of creative ideas you guys were making? Or what was that process like for you as a staff director?
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of different ways that an idea would come up.
Yeah.
Sometimes it would be like somebody had a thought or like a very broad premise for a video. And we, as a writer's room, would discuss it. There's a writer's room at Above Average. And there's been different sizes over the years. But sometimes it was three people, sometimes it was seven or eight.
Yeah.
And there'd be weekly or daily meetings where you kind of bring different ideas at whatever stage they're in, if they're a pitch, if they're a script, if they're something that's being developed, and we would all kind of read them out loud, read through them as a group, and then pitch around ideas. And I was always in these meetings throwing ideas out and kind of giving it a production perspective.
Sure. On a daily or a weekly basis?
It depends at what point what the company was in. Yeah. But once it got on its feet, I would say it was almost daily. Or when above average writers were managing the blog or the website, we would have a topical meeting at 11 in the morning. People would go off and write their articles, and then at 4 in the afternoon, there'd be a script meeting. And we'd read through, anywhere from like 2 to 6 scripts and work on them. And most videos that get shot at above average have gone through 6 to 7 rounds of revisions.
Oh. And were you, and I guess like, so for your touch points as a director, so you'd be in those meetings probably except for when you're actually making the videos, which was once a week.
Right.
Or thereabouts. Yeah. So the video would go from the sort of like pitch meeting to a script meeting, revision. It gets a green light somewhere in the process. I guess, is it the sort of environment where something trends towards green light and you start to pre-pro it a little bit? Or is there like a hard moment where it's like, okay, now this script is, we're passing it off. What was that environment?
Yeah, again, it was sort of case by case. Sometimes something would come up that was based on something topical, or there was other times there'd be like some kind of need from marketing or development saying, hey, we need this kind of video. Can you work towards that? So, like, for example,
so sometimes it would come from
January, February, we would do Oscar parody videos.
Okay.
So we knew, like, kind of coming into the new year, there'd be those things coming up, and each you know, movie parody video is ambitious in different ways. They're always like long days. There's a lot of locations, a lot of actors. So each one that would come up we'd be reading through, but we'd also be thinking about, is this possible? How do we pull this off? What kind of production team are we going to have to build to do this right?
Right.
But I think generally there would be every week or every other week, there'd be a meeting with other parts of the company where they would present a couple scripts, go through a couple ideas, and then come out of that with one or two that have been approved to shoot. And then it would go into the producer's hands. Her and I would start to collaborate, and we would kind of cue them up in the month or the couple of months leading up to it.
To execution.
Yeah.
And so you sort of have, so I guess how many scripts would there be in a production, pre-production or production phase at any given time?
Well, sometimes one would be approved, but it was challenging to pull off for like location or whatever. It was ambitious. So that one would be kind of set up later, further out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there would be one that involves like an actor that's doing a guest appearance. So that would be queued up further out and set for a specific day. But usually they would be approved maybe 2 weeks in advance.
Okay. 2 weeks in advance of shooting.
Yeah.
And then it's a pretty small sort of core team. Then you referenced a producer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty small team.
Yeah. It would be myself and a producer, one of three staff producers that were there at the time. And then we have a couple of in-house production coordinators and production assistants that would be doing what would be in like a larger production, a full-time job.
Yeah.
Like those people are doing our prop buying and our wardrobe selection and picking up catering and getting the van, going out and scouting locations with me.
And then you're going into production. And then as it goes into the post-production side, what was your workload there as the staff director?
Well, for most of the videos I worked on there, I was doing my own visual effects.
Okay.
So I'd be kind of, keeping that in mind when I was on set and knowing what I was going to have to get ready to handle in post. But there would be usually a staff editor, sometimes working with a freelancer, that would take the project, and they had a 2-week turnaround. So I think 4 or 5 days later, we'd see a first cut, and then I would spend 1 or 2 days of solid work getting together what usually ended up to be close to final edit. Put my edit together, bring the writer in, then we talk about it, and we change some things. And trying to lock the cut maybe after 8 days of work. We had a professional mix done, and the editor would usually color it.
Right.
So a two weeks from shoot to delivery, but that includes like a little bit of time for a marketing team to take it and kind of send it out to different places and try to get it seeded.
Seeded.
I mean, I don't know if that's the right word. Just try to get it placed on different blogs, different Facebook feeds. Okay. Yeah,
I know that was a technical term that I was missing.
I don't know. I'm probably misusing it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, but it sounds like then this is quite a pipeline then that you're sort of like balancing your brain between. Because if you're doing one video a week, broadly speaking.
Yeah, we were in pre-production on one while we're editing another, and then be on set while I have to take a look at a cut. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's just constantly things going on.
Yeah, and location scouting in the middle of it, and going to a writer's meeting and sort of all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think the way that they were able to do that successfully is by keeping things really light. Like just by having a few people, we don't need to coordinate with like a large team. Yeah. We don't have a huge overhead, so we can be a little more flexible in terms of like who's going out and doing what.
Yeah, and I guess I wonder in thinking about the sort of totality of it, because it does also feel like, I don't know, the story that seems to come in my brain is that you've got all these different levels of like what is like a really rapid environment. I would call it like a film school environment, even though by the time you're in this place, it's professional. But I just mean it's like it's that rapid turnover, sort of like let's just get a lot of reps that seems to have been going on now for 10 years. Uh-huh. But I guess when you think about the way that that process works, what do you feel like that the sort of like, does the stuff that you had done beforehand and the stuff you did on your own inform how you existed in that environment at all? Was it applicable? Or was it something that you had to learn separately?
No, I mean, it definitely is applicable. It is, you know, a kind of like base of knowledge that I was building on with every video.
Sure.
But I don't know. It was a different sort of approach. It was it took a little time to learn how to be more collaborative.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think looking at the videos I started out doing and the videos we ended up with, I think part of it was my growth, but also like the creative growth of the other people I was collaborating with. Mm-hmm. I definitely saw writers sharpen up and become better script writers in their time there. Kelly Harper, who was the head producer there and produced most of my videos, became better and better at putting shoots together. And she has a great artistic eye and is a great person to bounce ideas off of. Her and I think, collaborated a lot and kind of built a great creative relationship that helped these videos come together with such small means.
Very cool. And that sort of brings us towards like now and where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's all sort of like fresh.
Yeah.
The sort of change, and it wasn't necessarily something that you were looking for, the change itself. But now that you're here, I guess what are you working on now? Or what's the sort of like approach going forward to take what you've gained from that experience in the work? You're freelancing again, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everyone at Above Average is there because it's a way to get to the next step. I don't think anyone's like career goal is to be producing like these super scrappy, quick turnaround videos.
Sure.
So everyone there is learning and kind of building a skill set that they can move on to the next thing with. And after being there for 3 years, I felt like it was time to move on to the next thing. So right now it's more looking for jobs that are larger, that have a little bit more production investment, that can kind of be seen by more people and maybe lead to something bigger. Obviously, broadcast. I think everyone working in digital video is aiming towards either broadcast or film. So right now it's looking for like those bigger freelance jobs and also developing my own ideas and projects that can grow into bigger things.
Sure. And is that sort of like moving, is that potentially a transition towards like long form content?
Yeah.
In that way?
Yeah, for sure.
Take a bigger bite?
Yeah, if we're looking for something that can be, you know, either like a larger series that allows you to kind of build a more fully realized world, or, you know, a television show, a broadcast series in some capacity, or films. Yeah.
I have to also believe that, because there's also such a heavy, especially in that in the Above Average phase of your career, a very heavy style parody. And this goes back to the documentary stuff we're talking about too, a parody of a genre, parody of a style that also is unto itself still an execution in lieu of being able to make an action movie.
Yeah.
You have developed at a, you know, at a high level, the ability to sort of like still mimic, you know, to mimic that's, you know, to parody, mm-hmm. to sort of like still have shots that feel like they are authentic to the style that you're aping.
Yeah.
Right. So that also must inform an ability, especially when you look at the rapid fire and the sort of breadth of the work as a body of work over 3 or 4 years, also say, well, I can bite bigger and yeah. in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I mean, I love doing genre parody. I think
yeah.
it's an opportunity to put another level into a video, but it's also, I don't think it's just imitating the kind of shots and look of a video. It's kind of finding the tone and doing something inspired in our own project that yeah. you would imagine could exist in that genre in earnest. Yeah, I think genre parody is also a great way to kind of flex different muscles and move in directions that you might not have necessarily like leaned towards otherwise.
Sure.
Like, I definitely love doing doc stuff, and I feel like after doing the parodies, I could shoot one of those videos in earnest. And that goes for a lot of different other videos we shot, like, I don't know, action videos, whatever.
Yeah, a lot of different things. Is there, I guess in that case, because the one thing I would say is that, like, in thinking about going towards long form as opposed to short form, the benefit of the short form job is that you can sort of, like, be in 10 different projects at once, 10 different places.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, translating what you'd be passionate about in a long form space, what's the, I guess, where does that lead you? Like, what kind of stuff are you, what kind of voice as a director are you interested in sort of like pursuing as the bites get bigger, as the, I guess it becomes the full meal?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, yeah. you know, I love to collaborate with people that have a very specific voice.
Yeah.
I think that the work I've done, there isn't necessarily like a single style that's come out of it. I like mm-hmm. to kind of honor the writer's work and try to find the best approach that suits what's on the page. So I don't know, like imagining my ideal job, I don't know what that would be. Something that plays with a lot of different styles, I suppose. I don't know.
I mean, that also may just be informed by, it also is interesting, you also very much pitch yourself now as director. Is writer-director a hyphenate that you are pursuing too, or is it really about finding a collaborator on that end to, you know,
mm-hmm.
serve the visual component, the sort of like cinematic component of an idea that's yeah. scripted by somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely write my own stuff. I work on my own projects outside
yeah.
of... sketch videos, but I think there's always going to be a collaborative element, and I think that's one of the most exciting things, is getting to kind of mix ideas with another person and find something that's different or not something you could have developed on your own.
Sure. And then maybe just in terms of like, because you've worked with so many writers, especially like in that environment of a job like that, you're saying you're looking at their development, and you sort of have been in a position to like work with a really impressive scope of performers and writers and comedians and mm-hmm. filmmakers like across the board. But in talking about a writer-director relationship specifically, in terms of like collaboration from the director's point of view, is there anything that about that relationship that you feel like makes it work well? Or like, how do you like to work with a writer in a way that might instruct the way that a writer might approach working with a good director?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. In a broad way, I think I can start to look ahead to what's going to be happening on set, and I can start to think, oh, this might work better if we shoot this with a certain kind of style. Like yeah. if there's a reference that I have, I can share with the writer and think about, okay, maybe we frame the voice of this video in a slightly different way. I try to put some sort of unique spin on the videos I work on. I try to not just shoot something in a straightforward way or an expected way. So after working with a writer on a couple scripts, I can start to anticipate what their tastes are going to be and how flexible they are in terms of shooting something that's not necessarily on the page.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's sort of, you know, every collaboration is different, and I don't have a process exactly for approaching a writer. I just try to give them as much of my feedback and my creative opinion as I can.
Sure. And also trying to represent that other side of the thought process towards getting it done too, mm-hmm. especially in a no budget environment, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's part of the game is just understanding limitations and that everything you shoot is going to be done in a day. There's a certain amount of time you have and it has to be in one location and how we best manage our time. And that I think is one of the things I really try to focus on. And I think, what I would consider one of my strengths is being able to set things up in a way that maximizes how much time we're going to have to work on the scenes, work on the actor's performance, work on the delivery, try alts, just get the most out of the day.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, I know you're just sort of like starting this new phase, but good luck with it. You got a hell of a resume to go off of.
Thank you.
And I mean, who knows? I mean, there's got to be... we were just talking before about how New York is sort of like whatever. Like it seems like production in New York is getting a little bit weird in terms of like jobs. Are you committed to sticking around here or are you going to bolt to the other side of the country?
I don't know. We'll see. Like I am ready to move if there's an opportunity. I like New York and I'm happy to stick around if there's a reason to.
Sure.
It does seem like more and more like the center of the comedy community, at least at my level is out in Los Angeles. It just doesn't seem like there's as many opportunities here as there might have been a couple years ago. That might just be my perspective.
Yeah, and it's also I think sort of again where you're sort of like pushing yourself to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that this short form, I think especially in short form, it's changing in the kind of ways we were talking about before. Is it moves so quickly that like the kind of jobs that existed a couple of years ago, the delivery format isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's like going. No company right now is like directly going. Let's go to YouTube and that's it.
Yeah,
and investing a lot there
mm-hmm.
because some of the shine is sort of like moved other places. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not something I spend a lot of time concentrating on, to be honest.
Sure.
Like I try to do the best videos I can, but the way that they're sold, the way they're distributed, I guess that's maybe like a fault of mine is that I'm not a hustler in that regard. Like I'm not out trying to figure out what the next thing is and how I can get a piece of it. I just like working on the stuff I'm working on and, you know, putting the time in on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for doing this.
Of course.
All right, that'll do it for episode number 42 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thank you so much out there for tuning in. If you like this show, the nicest thing you could do is share it with a friend. Let them know that you like this show, that it has value to you. Spread this show around. We always love new folks to come in and join the conversation about digital filmmaking in this uncertain times. You can always subscribe and rate and review on iTunes as well. iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. That's the best place to go for all things UCB Digital Podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook as well at UCB Digital. Thanks so much to Tim Beerbohm for sitting down and chatting. Really great to catch up with him, sip a beer, and have a nice conversation. And I hope it was valuable for you as well. Thanks to the Bronx Brewery for providing the Slow Your Roll IPA that we drank during this show. You can find Slow Your Roll IPA at the UCB East Bar quite often, as well as, I believe, their seasonal spring beer is on tap at UCB East. And you can find all their brews at thebronxbrewery.com. They've got a tasting room up in the Bronx you can go check out, and they are all over the craft beer scene. They're also the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, and thanks to them for supporting this show. As always, you can follow UCB Comedy all over social media. We've got videos on YouTube, on Vimeo, podcasts coming out all the time at UCB Comedy everywhere and on social media as well. We hope that you've enjoyed this show. We hope you'll come back for another episode next week. And until then, y'all, we'll see you on the internet.
has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.